Hello, everybody. Welcome back to this week's episode of The War Room, brought to you as part of the Clone Star podcast. I am your host, Mike Overton, and joining me in the co-host seat this week is the wonderful Joseph Hurley. Sho, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Mike.
No worries. Now, our guest this week, we are delighted to be joined by an incredible actress, director, photographer, who's worked on such shows as Chucky, Law and Order, Criminal Intent, and most importantly, Star Trek Discovery, playing the amazing Commander Nan. It is Rachel Anchell. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. So good to be here.
Also, I have to say, Nan is one of my favorite characters. And I'm disappointed we didn't get to see her more in season 3 and 4.
I apologize. I think that's largely my fault. But you have not seen the end of her. So there will be, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it.
That's fine. But this will go out after the first episode's aired, so. Okay, it will go out.
Well, let's
figure that out.
We might have to edit that part out there, Mike, otherwise Rachel may never be seen at all. You just see kind of the outline of her, it'll kind of say censored up along it then as well.
We just put a big black bar over the screen saying censored, yeah. The big...
Exactly. But thank you so much for saying that. I always love hearing that people love Commander Nan too. She's a great character. She was a lot of fun to play.
My other half never really got into Star Trek until recently. And we had this arrangement when Discovery first aired, because Game of Thrones was airing at the same time. And I'm not a massive fantasy fan. So I made the promise that I will watch all 8 seasons of Game of Thrones if he watched Star Trek Discovery with me. And it's taken until last year for him to watch all of the episodes. So we're now finally up. He's now finally up to date. And he literally turned around to me the other day and goes, I can't wait to see more Nan. I went, yes.
Oh, my God. Lots of love.
Yep. So, yeah, we're big Nan fans in this household. Well, that and obviously Saru, because, well, Saru.
Well, Saru, I mean.
Yeah.
Saru.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's all it needs to say. So, okay. Anyway, enough Star Trek talk for now. We're going to cut back onto that in a bit. So I tell you what, let's start at the beginning. How did you get into acting?
I literally broke my leg. You know that old adage.
Break a leg, yep.
Yeah, already did that. So I was hell-bent on becoming a police officer. That's what I wanted to do. And I went to an arts high school. Despite trying out for drama several times, I was never accepted. But I got into visual arts. Right. And then I totally rebelled against the arts. And I was like, forget the arts. Who makes money out of this anyway? And then I went full into law enforcement. So I was doing security work all the time. I was in college. I was pretty young when I was doing this. So, but I was a desirable candidate, I guess, for the force, especially at that time. And a month before my qualifying exam to get onto the, like, you had to just sort of qualifying test to be able to apply for whichever force you wanted to get into. And a month before that, which is it's a written, a physical, all the interviews, all of that thing. I got into a big accident, car accident. I was pushed into oncoming traffic and I broke my leg. Uh-huh. And that kind of put me out for, it gets you a couple ways, right? It got me physically. I was out for 4 months, but then also mentally, right? When you're so young too, you think I'm invincible and nothing can touch me, you know, and it's nothing like something like that to sort of kick the wind out of you. And then I started thinking about what it meant to be on the police force. And every single day you're putting your life potentially on the line. You don't know, right? It's such an unpredictable career. And forgive the pun, but I was a little gun shy. I was a little concerned. So and then I just did this whole backwards. I went back into arts, visual arts, and I did fashion design for a couple of years while I was in a cast, because I'm just that type of person. I'm a type A. And then that led me into the corporate world, and I hated the corporate world. It felt like my soul was dying and I was like chained to a desk. And I'm like, this is no. So, but I have big lips. Maybe I can do lipstick ads. This is a great idea. And I met they were like, no, no, no. But maybe acting. I was like, listen, there's no way. I tried arts program. No way. They denied me. And then before I knew it, it took several years, but yeah. It just started like, it was like a snowball. So thankfully I am where I am today.
I find it interesting, Rachel, you were saying about the corporate world and things like that. And poor Mike and myself, unfortunately, are stuck in that corporate world. But
well, you more than me. I do creative stuff in the corporate world, but you are proper corporate finance, boring stuff.
I better check my contract here to see what I'm allowed to say on podcasts like this. No, I'm allowed, not allowed to discuss any further. So I'm just going to just pretend.
He's a learning and development manager for a finance
company.
And I'm a web designer, so...
How do you but this is your outlet though, Ben Show, right? Like this is your doing stuff like this gets that creative side of you.
Wait a second, when did this turn into an interview of me? I'm not the guest here, I'm the co-host in this situation.
I'd like to welcome my co-host Rachel.
Thank you for having me.
So Rachel, hang on a second, we like, where was the spark to do kind of any time like of creativity? Like is like, was when you grew up, was your kind of house a creative house? Like were your parents kind of creative people, or what was it that kind of prompted you to kind of say, I want to do something creative at some point in my life?
My mom was a creative, but she was more, I think really it's probably my grandparents that really, like my mom was definitely creative. She's very skilled. She's more of she inspired my love of horses, of all things country. That was my mom. My dad is a suit guy. but my grandparents always introduced me to theater. They always encouraged my writing. They encouraged, they just always encouraged the arts. Arts was always at the end, really quality films. That also for my mother was a big thing, watching quality stuff and learning from that. So but I think I'm the first one that kind of did it as a job, as a career.
Yeah,
like that. I actually, it's still sort of, I think, misunderstood in my family. I mean, they think if I'm not on set, they're like, what are you doing? And it's like, well, there's so much other stuff that happens. To, you know, like an audition can take you hours and hours and hours of preparation, and they, especially the more business-minded people in my family, are like, but you're not getting paid. And it's like, yeah, I know that.
Thanks.
You have to do this to get paid the big dollars to do, you know, when you get paid really well. So yeah, it's interesting.
What was your first experience then of being up on stage?
Oh, grade
oh, lovely.
Six.
It's one of those stories. Oh, yes. This is what I want to hear now.
No, grade six. I think I always loved, I think like my parents had a very interesting relationship. There was a lot of tension. And I think that I went to acting, like perform, like this idea of performing in the arts and creativity and imagination. And again, I lived in the country, so I didn't have friends close by. I have siblings which are way younger than me. And so I was on my own a lot. And I think imagination was an escape. And then when I was around my parents, it was a chance to sort of be like, hey, look at me, and don't fight, and everything's okay. And I'm like that now, you know what I mean? And so I think that was probably the beginning of it. And also imagination and where that can take you. And especially as a kid, you know, especially if you're isolated and it's another world, right? It's another world. And yeah. And then in grade six, I got the lead. We were auditioning and I got the lead, one of the leads in this play. And I was one of the older kids. There was four of us. And I wore like a pantsuit. My mom put me in this pantsuit, and the other girl was dressed in a dress. She was so pretty. And I swear, maybe that's why I wear suits all the time now. I don't know, but I just don't do dresses. So that's my earliest experience of performing. There we go.
I'm sorry now. I'm laughing at this whole image of you on stage, like with this angry face in your pantsuit, looking over at the other person in the dress, going, "I'm going to kill you at some point for what you've done to me here."
To be fair, it sounds a lot better than my first time on a stage. I was in the school musical of Greece, and I hated every moment of it because I was kind of everybody obviously wants to be John Travolta, but no, not me. I'm some random bloke that has three lines and lots of singing. So could I remember those three lines? Not on your
module.
Oh, Mike, there's got to be videotape of that somewhere that we need to see. And Rachel, there must be some kind of photographic evidence of you in that pantsuit. I'd say that is absolutely hilarious.
Maybe. If I find it, it'll be horrendous. If I do find a picture, I will send it to you. I promise.
Oh, yes. This is what we want.
That'll be the thumbnail to the episode.
So, Rachel, after the instance with the, say, ditching the police force and kind of, you know, going through the corporate world and things like that, what was your next step then after that? Did you want to go back and study this as a career, or what did you want to do in terms of saying, right, I'm going to give this a go. What's the best way for me to approach it?
By this point in time, I'd been through two post-secondary educations, both of which were useless. I thought, okay, I had a lot of people tell me, you should go back to school. You should go to theater school. You're never going to make it. You need to learn. So I started taking acting classes with different coaches that I had heard of. And at the same time, I started doing student films and non-union, anything that I could sort of submit myself for. There's a site called Mandy.com, and I would send myself out for all these things. But I was also doing crew work at the time because I thought, at this point in my life, if I'm going to learn about this, I want to learn about it from ground up. So I did one stint in Cinderella Man. I was a background. I will never do that again. I hated it. I hated being a background performer. I didn't realize how many politics there are with that. I remember I was standing at the wrong table for lunch, and I wasn't a union actor. So I got like the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and then the union actors were like fed like kings and queens. And I just first right off the bat thought that was total.
You can curse here. Don't worry. It's a very safe space.
Right up. What is this? Hated it. But then doing crew work, I was doing, because I had the fashion background, I was doing costume design. I did a bit of casting assistance to learn like how do auditions go? And so I learned a lot that way. I think I probably had my own, you know, what's that saying? 2 years in school is worth a year in the field, yeah. Something like that. And I think that's basically what happened. And then because I was doing these non-union and these student films, well, all these people are going towards union. And so was I. So even today, I will see people on set that are crew members that I'm like, oh my God, I did your student film, you know, way back. It's awesome. It's really neat. Full circle.
Oh my word. And Rachel, like, I suppose at this point now, are you thinking of, like, because you've done all the background work, you've done the kind of the writing and kind of getting experience. Are you still there going, I want my future to be in front of the screen? Are you saying, John, I wouldn't mind producing? Or would you kind of say you were looking at directing or even writing? What were you kind of thinking at this point would be the best way forward for you?
So I have a writing partner. He actually approached me about turning a novelist, young adult novelist, and he wanted to turn one of his books into a feature film. Wow. So we worked really, really well together. So we did this, we turned this into a feature film, then we did like a Lifetime, and then I had a pitch about War Brides, and I fell in love with the East Coast of Canada and I really wanted to go back. So I'd written this pitch when I was out there. And so we wrote the pilot for that. So we've done a few projects together. Is writing my love? No, I enjoyed it. But I was writing very much from a visual standpoint. I think being the first time I ever picked up a DSLR, a camera, or actually that was an SLR at the time, it was film, was for a crime scene photography class I was taking in school. And my first photos I ever took, I still have them somewhere, are my crime scene photos. You know, here's a dollar bill next to a footprint. And, you know, it was...
Here's a white outline of a dead body.
I mean, you know, and listen, school was awesome because we had one class. I'm going to divert here for a second. We had one class that there was on the campus, there was this old house that was set up and each room was a crime scene. So that was for us in our second year to go in. They had mannequins in there. They had like grains of rice around the eyes to be like maggots. It was so cool. It was like, and you have to go in and collect the evidence and do everything by the book. So it was pretty awesome. So
I take it you're not squeamish then.
I'm actually not. I can be for some things, but no, I forensics was probably one of the only classes I got above a 90 in ever in my life. I really enjoyed it. That's kind of weird. It's kind of creepy, actually, but it's, I'm not a Dexter, I promise. I love being behind the camera. And every time that I seem to be behind the camera, I book in front of the camera a lot. So when I started getting directing kind of going, which I really enjoyed, I was doing sort of these style guides for the Queen's Plate. So in Canada, now it's the King's Plate, but the Queen's Plate was the longest, like the oldest horse race in North America. And now, of course, everyone knows the Kentucky Derby, of course, the Ascot. But here, so I, my mom was a horse person. I mentioned this, and she used to work at the racetrack. So I approached them and I did my first directing with them, doing their style guides, because that sort of blended my love of cameras, blended my love of fashion together. And then I was sort of getting that going and then got busy with Star Trek Discovery, got busy with Killjoys. And you know what? That's my first love. I love being in front of the camera. Behind is just as good. But if I could be in front of the camera for the rest of my life, I'd be happy. Yeah.
So I have to ask the Adam Driver question at this situation then, Rachel. And you're there going, what the fuck is the Adam Driver question? And the Adam Driver question is this. Can you watch your own performances back? Adam Driver can't. He will not watch himself. So I'm always curious, can you watch yourself back or do you have to watch through your fingers?
Yeah. So for example, there's some lovely ladies I know and they were like, oh, your Law and Order episodes tonight. Let's have a viewing party. And I'm like, no. No, because I will watch my stuff back, but I pick it. Everything I'm doing, every facial expression,
everything.
And I am no fun because I get really cranky. So I'm a little bit of both, but highly critical of myself. Yes.
And like in terms of say, you know, outside of Star Trek and things like that, what have been some of the other shows that you really enjoyed kind of working on? I know one show Mike is going to specifically talk about because he really likes it. So Mike, I'm going to let you ask that question.
So how was Rookie Blue? Because I loved that show.
I'm sorry if you hated my character.
I loved your character.
See, this is refreshing. Someone said this to me the other day. They were like,
some people really hate it. And I can understand why. But at the same time, I know I loved your character.
Thank you for saying that. I mean, you know, I saw Tassie at the Law & Order rap party, and we were talking about that. And she goes, I don't understand. Like, why did I? So she fell in love with a guy. So she was dealing with a mental illness. Like, she said, I don't understand what it was. I think I have like a nervous twitch when it comes to Rookie Blue, because that was also my first introduction to fandoms.
Right. Yeah. Rookie Blue is quite a big fandom, doesn't it?
Yeah. And that's quite the learning curve. Especially that was my first show, right?
Yeah.
But I loved it. I loved the people so much. I would work with any of them again and again. Like, I love them so much. And I feel so lucky to have done that character because at the same time, like, being an actor for me is being able to reach people the same way that actors reached me when I was a kid and I looking for other worlds. And I, if I am able to touch someone through art and give them hope or make them laugh or something in some way, then my job is well done. That's what I want. It's not awards. It's not accolades. It's have I reached you? Have I influenced you in a positive way? great.
Yep.
And so that's why I feel very grateful for Marlo. She was a really interesting ride for me. And to this day, I'm like, I don't know why I was picked. I remember the first day of shooting. It was like 4:30 in the morning. I was getting ready to get picked up, and I'm in the bathroom and I'm looking at myself in the mirror. I'm like, okay, how do I get out of this? How do I? Can I be sick? I don't know. I was terrified.
So did your police experience help a lot? Or your police training, I should say, not experience. Or did you just kind of have to throw it all out and start again?
Yeah, girl, that's such theory stuff, right? Like, what I learned was, like, these are the laws. These are the statutes. This is the hierarchy of evidence. Maybe holding a gun, sure. Yeah. I could shoot a gun before I did Rookie Blue. I guess that kind of came in handy in one of the episodes. But no, I mean, you're not going to handcuff actors maybe the way that you would handcuff someone you're taking into custody.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
There's probably several shots in there where I'm faking putting on cuffs because I didn't want to be like, right? Like, oh my God, are you okay? I'm sorry if this hurts, you know? Like.
And Rachel, you mentioned about the fandom. Like, was that a good or not so good way of embracing the Rookie Blue fandom?
No, that they were scary. I understand the passion behind a show. I understand people having strong opinions about characters. I've totally had it. Never once though in my life have I ever thought of reaching out to an actor and screaming at them because of what's happening in the show. Like, I had people telling me that I ruined their show. I was ugly. They wished that I died. How dare I? I didn't stand a chance next to Missy. Like, they were talking about us as humans, not our care, which was, and I remember when the news broke and people knew, because everyone was expecting who Marlo was. Oh, who's going to be Marlo? Who's going to be playing Marlo? And then we were on set, and I can tell you the exact frame. it was the episode where Sam finds McNally in the truck, and there's like this beautiful lighting, and the truck back goes up, and Sam sees Andy for the first time, and they're both like, you know, and Marlo's standing in the back like, oh shit, here we go. And on my face, right before we shot that, I'm not this big of a baby, but I was in a chair crying because people were ripping me a new one. They'd never met me. They'd never seen me act before. They didn't know who I was, and they were ripping me a new one. And I remember the producers coming up to me and being like, I guess we should have prepared you. And I was like,
you think?
Yeah. And it didn't matter. You know, the cast was so good, and the cast would try to stand up for me. But listen, I know there's some of the guys were going through some stuff with the fans not liking them, but let me just tell you, that fandom was rougher on females than they were on the guys, like 100%. I think it's easier for a female fandom to really rip on the girl more than they would on the guy. Doesn't matter if you're both interfering in that relationship, you know what I mean? So it was something else. But I tell you, now that Rookie Blue sort of hitting this Gen Z, like,
yeah,
my niece called me the other day and she was like, oh my God, my friend is such a huge fan of Rookie Blue. And I was like, oh. And she was like, I loved your character, you introduced mental health in this. And she saw it from such a totally different way. And I was like, oh, thank you for saying that. That meant a lot.
And I think that's the thing now as well with a lot of the shows, especially the shows that were around in sort of, you know, the early 2000s, like 2010-ish era, because that's when, well, Rookie Blue was what, 2013?
Before that, yeah, because I came in season four, that was 2013.
So 2009 then. But yeah, and that wasn't a thing. Mental health wasn't a thing. It wasn't really portrayed on any TV show, really. And then Rookie Blue brings it in. And I think a lot of people just misunderstood that more than the actual character.
Very interesting.
And I think now that mental health is such a big thing, I think a lot of people, especially younger people, as you said, Gen Z and that, are looking at it from a very different perspective because they get mental health. They understand mental health. Whereas, to be fair, when I was their age, I was like, get a grip and get on with it. It's not a thing. Now it's a very different story. And I think that's why it's resonating now more with younger people because people understand it more.
Now, we are kind of getting close to kind of dating the podcast again by saying show started in 2009 and like young people now, like the three of us sound like we're old fogies and kind of saying young people today, they're only starting to understand what's going on. And also viewers and listeners of the show, just before we started recording, Rachel tried to age us disgracefully by saying, mentioning the Blair Witch Project and then saying, do you guys remember that? And yes, you did, Rachel. You tried to shame us in that situation. Absolutely outrageous.
No, I shamed myself. Are you kidding me? About you guys? That was a compliment to you.
Wait a second. I'm 41 years old. That movie came out and I was 16. So I'm old enough to remember it. Yeah, I know. It is.
Come on. Are you a fan of Fawlty Towers? Don't mention the war. Don't.
I love Fawlty Towers.
I love Fawlty Towers.
Who doesn't like Fawlty Towers?
So I went for the dinner experience last week.
Oh, did you? What's it like?
Oh my God, I was smitten. And Manuel put Basil the Rat right next to me. I felt very honored. I've made it.
Let's face it, that show would be nothing without John Cleese.
Oh yeah, very much so. You put Basil in the Ratatouille. Sorry, this episode has now turned into a commentary on the Fawlty Towers episodes.
My favorite episode is the deaf woman. The deaf old lady who was moaning about the bath wasn't big enough and the view from the Torquay hotel window wasn't enough. And he turns around and says, what were you expecting? That the Gardens of Babylon. I'm now going to go watch Fawlty Towers after this.
You know what my afternoon's going to be, okay?
Fawlty Towers.
Fawlty Towers, right from the number one.
I'll quickly throw it in. Have you seen Yes Minister or Yes Prime Minister by any chance?
I have.
You have? Oh my word. Yep. Yeah,
I essentially grew up with my grandparents. So Saturday nights was Are You Being Served, The Bucket Woman, Fawlty Towers. Bucket Woman. Oh yeah, all of it. I love John Cleese is actually probably the only actor, if I met him, I would be completely starstruck, like idiotic, not able to say anything, and which would be, I'm sure, very fun for him. Yeah.
Have you listened to his autobiography, actually?
I have not.
The fun thing is, it actually ends just as he's starting out with Monty Python. But if you actually want to have an understanding of where he's coming from, the book is actually brilliant. He goes through his entire early life and his career and things like that. So it's absolutely worth a listen. It's really kind of interesting just in terms of, say, how his own performances kind of happened. And like he talks about some stage direction he got. And you kind of, they're going, when he finished it, you're going, oh my God, so this is where the character of Basil Fawlty really kind of came from as well, then in terms of his approach and things like that. So if you're a huge John Cleese fan, find the audiobook and get it, because it's actually really unique in terms of the background that it gives you on his life.
Love that. I definitely will. Thanks for the recommendation. I read the behind the scenes, I read the Fawlty Towers book, like all about how the show came. But thank you for that recommendation. I will definitely get that this afternoon. Yeah.
Jesus, better jump back into the interview.
Sorry.
I completely got it. No, not at all.
We love a sidetrack. It's great.
Absolutely. Perfect. Exactly right. In terms of, because you were trying to shame us about a horror film, had you seen the original Chucky movies, the Child's Play movies, before you went on the show?
The original. Mm. Yes. I had a friend growing up who, first of all, she loved anything 80s. She still does. She still does. I will send her a Cyndi Lauper meme or the Goonies meme anytime I can. So she loved 80s horror. So she was my intro into Chucky. I'm terrified as a child, like terrified. And there used to be this little doll that my Nana had that had bright red orange hair. Oh, and so no. My had fully convinced me that it was Chucky coming for me. It was a thing. Yeah.
See, I hate anything horror. I don't do horror. So that for me would, I mean, I can just about get through the Saw movies, and that's kind of the you know, that and Final Destination is about as bad as I will go.
Final Destination, bravo to actually watch. I watched the first one and I was like, never again, never.
I actually used, I can't remember which one it is now, but there is a whole scene where, and I can't remember which Final Destination it is, but they're on the they're on the highway, the truck with all the logs breaks apart, the logs go tumbling down the highway and end up going straight through the driver's seat of the car and squish. I actually used that as a final project for college, because I did sound production at college. So I did, because I wanted to do sound design, so I did all the sound design of like the logs breaking off and everything. Yeah, so I used that as a project.
Oh, wow. My god,
so brilliant. For the best part of about 3 months, I literally watched this 3-minute loop of logs breaking off of a truck, squishing a person in the car, logs breaking off, doing the sound design. Yeah, so it kind of desensitized me a little bit to that episode, that movie.
Mike, I think you probably need to get help and talk to someone about this kind of situation. It sounds quite traumatic what you put yourself through there for the purposes of college.
That's the worst I got. Anything over that, can't do it.
Do you have problems driving behind trucks now that have stuff in?
Nope, I have no problem with that. I mean, so, I remember, so I mean, I must have been 14, 15 when the movie Signs came out.
Oh, yes.
And I had nightmares for months. It was an alien. It was more of an alien horror, but it was only rated 12.
Yeah.
And it had, yeah.
The one Mel Gibson and Joaquin Phoenix in it, yeah.
Yeah, there was this scene with the kids in, I think they were in China or something, with the video camera, and then all of a sudden the alien just walks out from behind them. That freaked me. I had to walk out the cinema. That freaked me. And the movie's rated 12. It's like, and I'm like 15, 16 at this point. Well, nope, that's it. I'm done. I'm out. And I had movies for months after watching it. I had nightmares for months after watching that. Couldn't do it. Even now, at 33, I can't watch it.
So, Rachel, what's the movie that still to this day scares you that you can't look back on?
Exorcist.
Oh, yeah, I can.
Oh, The Exorcist, the original. No way. No, and listen, one of my favorite films is The Shining. That's like, I mean, I'm a huge Kubrick fan. So, but The Exorcist, I watched it one time, will never again watch it. And speaking of fandoms, did you know that that poor girl had people, like, there were parents that wouldn't let their kids be friends with her because she did that film, because they thought like actually she was possessed or something. And it's like, no, it was a film. Yeah. Crazy.
But Andrew Robinson all over again.
Bloody hell.
Andrew Robinson had problems after he did.
Come on, Mike, get it together. You can get the name of it. Come on, Mike, you can do it.
It's gone.
Mike. Come on, it's two gone. Words. It's two words. One's a name. One's an adjective. Stop Googling it. I can see your hands. I can see you typing at the keyboard. Stop it.
Gone. It's gone.
Rachel, for the steal and for 100
Dirty
points.
Harry, there
what?
We go.
No, for the love of God.
Sorry, Andrew Robinson had a very similar thing after Dirty Harry, where no one would hire him because they thought he was literally a serial killer.
Unbelievable.
But at the end of that, that's just a testament to their acting, I think.
Rachel, how did Star Trek come about then? How did... Actually, wait a second, diving back from that. Were you a Star Trek fan before you came on the show?
My mom was a huge fan of the original series. So I watched, by default, the original series a lot when I was younger. Huge crush on Spock. What is the answer here? Oh, not the one. The original series.
I was about to say, you're treating this like, number one, you've never been asked this question before. And number two, it almost looked like you're about to try and Google an answer to save you. What do I say in this situation? What are the names of the other Star Trek series? Next Generation. No, that doesn't sound right at all. I've never heard of
Deep Space Four or something like that.
No, okay, now listen, in all fairness, when I found out that I was going to play a Barzan, I definitely did my homework and I saw Bhavani. So I remember her name. But no, I did watch a fair amount of the original series. And also by default, I'm a huge Lucille Ball fan, and I have read everything about Lucille Ball, including her bio. Yep. And so there's this photo that I took. I remember my last day, season 3, and there was my chair with Non on the back, and I was reading my Desi Lu book. And so I put it on the chair, and I took a picture on, you know, we were in the hallways of the ship, and I thought, this is the closest I'm ever going to get to work with Lucille Ball, even though it's, I'll never get to work with, obviously she's dead, but like, wow, how cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you find so inspiring about Lucille Ball's story then, Rachel?
How much she overcame. I mean, when I read about her childhood, and I think because she was so close to her granddad, and I'm very close to my grandparents, and the stuff that she went through and her family went through in her youth. And I'm not saying that I had a wonderful childhood. It could have been way worse, but I just felt like I identified with her a lot, and people basically telling her she couldn't act, or she couldn't. I mean, she's the greatest comedian of all times, and how many times people said no, no, no. And I think a lot of people forget how many times actors are told no in a year. You're told no more than most people ever get in their whole lifetime. So just how fiery she was, how driven she was, that's really inspiring for me, because I'm very much like that. I just keep driving towards the goal. So just Lucille Ball in general, I think she's spectacular. And she was and I love a lot of Hollywood history, and she was one of the first female CEOs, like, or heads of a studio like that. She broke. And of course, Desi Arnaz too. I mean, like, they there's so much film history, you know, the three camera setup, the idea of shooting on the West Coast to be with family, but being able to air it in the East Coast, and just all the things that we sort of take for granted today, seeing where they came from, it's amazing. It's like Kubrick with the Steadicam. That was the first time ever used for film was The Shining. Brilliant.
And in terms of the audition process then, Rachel, for Star Trek, what was it like?
I auditioned a few times for different characters. They were done in hotel rooms because I was not at home and I was shooting on other shows. The one that I did for Non, this was kind of cool. I went in for the audition in person. It was great. And as I was leaving, so there used to be this code name. There's always code names for the shows, right? And this one, it was the name of the state and something else was the code name for Star Trek that season. What season was season 2? And I left the audition, and I'm waiting in traffic, and I looked in front of me, and the license plate on the car in front of me was that state. And it's like a down, like, so far away from here. It's not like New York or something. No, it was
Texas. Down
south. Like, dang, close, not Texas. I was like, oh, maybe that's a sign. And then boom, I got called that. I booked it. It was pretty awesome.
And what preparation did you do for the, because I know when you said earlier, like, you do a lot of preparation for your auditions and things like that. What specifically did you do for the audition for Non, for, you know, when you were doing your preparation?
I'm going to be honest with you. I can't remember. I can't even remember what the audition sides were. I don't even know if they were, because sometimes they give you audition sides that aren't even for your character. They just want to see how you, right? So I don't even know that it said Non. And I know that a lot of the creation of Non happened after I booked the role. Like, the way that Non was supposed to look was totally different than what I ended up looking like. I didn't have hair. I was a totally different alien. So that was, it was neat with Non. Like, I think more of the interesting stuff was happening once I was sitting with prosthetics, sitting with hair and makeup, and seeing what they were doing to create this character that I was going to embody. I know there's some actors who they really create the whole character, right? I'm not like that. And maybe it's because I don't have the formal training, but to me, it's it's observing the arts of all these other departments that are creating this character along with the writers. And then where do I as an actor fit into all of that, you know? So that's pretty awesome. I had a very 60s vibe, very original series vibe happening, which was so cool. And that for me was really awesome because it was like an ode for my mom, you know, like, oh my God, I'm a red shirt. Like, yeah. Awesome. Probably the only actor that was ever like, yeah, red shirt. Yeah.
But were you then thinking, damn, they're going to kill me off?
I thought they were going to. I mean, I knew obviously the first episode they weren't going to, but I thought for sure, I like a red shirt. I'm going to die at some point. And everyone that I knew that were fans of the show, they were like, oh, dude, red shirt.
But then I suppose your red shirt changed into a bronze shirt. So, well, bronze is blue, doesn't it?
And I was deeply upset by that. I'm not going to lie. Like, because I didn't know that I was staying on the ship. Like, this all just happened in the script. I didn't know. Well, I was supposed to be around for 3 episodes. That was it. And then right. I was supposed to be on my merry way. So I remember one day going into the trailer and opening up the wardrobe, and I was like, blue? What is this? You know? So
how is your makeup then? Because I'm trying to remember. There's obviously, you've got a forehead piece, then you've obviously got your breathers. So are they glued to your face? Are they sort of hooked on your ears, or are they part of your hair piece, or?
Both. They were like, they hooked around like eyeglasses around here, sort of. That's yeah. How we knew where they went. And then they were stuck like right here. There was a bit of tacky tape here, which was great because then I could take them off for lunch, eat my lunch like a normal human.
Not like and then poor Doug, who's literally confined in silicon for 19 hours a day.
With the straw, the smoothies. Yeah.
I did enjoy, Rachel, the way you kind of interpretively showed us how you eat your lunch, because you were kind of there going to take off the breathers and eat my lunch. They're just in case we're not sure how somebody eats their lunch. So
perhaps Barzans eat lunch differently. You never
know. If you're listening to this episode on Spotify and not watching it on YouTube, you might need to watch it on YouTube just to see how Rachel eats her lunch, because it's a very informative way of doing it. And like, was the makeup comfortable then, Rachel, or was it kind of like a bit of a nuisance, or like how, the whole process as well of getting it on? How long did it take to get on? How long did it take to get off?
So my process was 3 hours in total. They got it down to about 2.5 towards the end. they're trying different ways to cut down that time. Listen, prosthetics I found super fun in the beginning. And then, it's a chore. And I'm not even fully covered up. I don't even know how. But some actors love that whole process. But I loved being in the prosthetics trailer. Like that's where the party was at. Like, it was such a good time. And we come in there on a like Friday night or Saturday morning, and we come in there, and the first season, like the head of prosthetics would have like music blasting, and there'd be like disco balls going and turning on and off the lights like it was a party. It was good times. It was good times with good people. So I will never regret that. I thought that was super fun. The pieces were really easy. You know, they put them on, they paint them, and then I'd go into either hair or beauty makeup. And then that was, you know, that was the process. No.
So did you prefer the makeup from season 2 or the makeup from season 3? Because obviously season 3, there's a lot less because you've just got the two little sort of virtual breathe. Well, okay, halfway through season 3, I should say, because you've got the reduced breathers, haven't you? And was that easier to work with because you didn't have these things sort of stuck to the side of your face?
These, you didn't even, they're so lightweight, you didn't even really notice that while, right? And then this piece was just like as if they were stuck in, right? Okay. The only big change was my eyes. That was the only big change of that season. Really, for me, I was having a hard time with the lenses, so it was nice to ditch those off. I loved Commander Non's blue peepers, though. I really wish that I could have kept them, but my body was like, no, no. Dice, sister. Nope.
And like, in terms of, say, the episodes you were on, Rachel, what were some of your favorite memories from kind of being on set?
Oh, favorite. I learned, aside from the times during the pandemic, I loved when I'm on set, in the in-between shots, if time allows for the director, I'm usually with the director talking to them or camera guy or someone and learning something new. Why do you guys use that lens? Well, I mean, I might be super annoying, but they always treat me so well. They, you know, so some of my favorite shots of me behind the scenes, I'm like this, like focused on whatever they're showing me. So that's great. But also the camaraderie too of the cast. I mean, there were some really, really, really late nights, and all of a sudden there would be a fashion show happening and Doug would be marching down the runway and then Ethan Peck marching down the runway. And I'm like, I mean, this is great. Or my favorite memory is the very first episode I was in when we were all in the turbo lift and Linus, his team. I mean, I think that was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and poor David, he's such a pro. David is very like, and he's one of those actors that loves the prosthetics and all of that. He's such an amazing human. And he was mortified. And all of us were just in stitches. Like, that's one of my favorite shots that Anson had posted, was the one where we're all laughing. And it was just good times. Good times.
Actually, David is on the show with us in 3 weeks. And when I told him that you were coming on, he said, would you please say hello to her? Because she's the best person. So there we go. So David, I can make sure that I can tell him now that I delivered the message to you here on our show.
And right back at him, 100%.
I have to ask a question, Rachel. In person, is Anson Mount's hair as impressive as it is when we look at it on the big screen?
100%. 100%. He should be on hair commercials. It's so perfect. And all the time, a windstorm would be happening and my hair is like this and he's like there with his perfect.
But his hair's like that all the time, even when he's not in, like, outside of work, his hair is like that all the time.
And perfect.
Yeah. I mean, perfect. I was quite fortunate. I met him in London last year at the Strange New Worlds premiere. And yeah, his hair was there. It was perfect. Everyone else had been blown around from left to right and was sweaty and horrible when it all got... No, he was there perfect every time. I reckon he uses like Bondo or something to hold his hair in place.
And Rachel, if you were to pick one scene above all else from your time on the... Well, up until season 4, because there's another season to come, what would you say from season 2, 3, or 4 would be your favorite scene that you've done so far? See, now, this is where the tough questions start to come in now. We have to make it really tough for you to make the one decision.
Yeah, I love anything action. But I loved Heart to Hearts with Burnham, too. Oh, favorite scene.
You've got to pick one. You can only pick one. That's the rule now. You can only pick one.
I'm going to say the turbo lift just because of the shenanigans that happened behind the scenes. I'm going to say the turbo lift. Just that stands out as a fondest memory for me. I mean, best scene for non.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can say this then, even though you specified time. It hasn't happened yet.
Oh, my God. Oh, dear God.
Okay, so hang on. Is it better than Project Daedalus?
Oh, that was a good episode.
Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think I can speak for most people. We cried when Arium was killed. But at the same time, that episode was incredible for Nan.
Yeah.
Because I think that was a turning point as well, where her relationship with Burnham changed.
That was tough. Yeah. Let me tell you something. Looking at Sonequa, like, she, first of all, looks like a Disney princess. Her eyes, like... disappointment and hate and love and upset, like all the emotions in her eyeballs. It was tough to look at her. That was a great episode. That was a great, and Hannah was terrific. That was a great episode. I'm gonna say that's probably my favorite episode, maybe, out of the ones that Nan was in. Yeah.
And yeah. Actually, Rachel, you were saying as well about like how kind of fun the camaraderie is on the set and all that. Who are the kind of main ringleaders for kind of keeping it fun on the set then from the cast?
All of them. But Mary Wiseman, I can't, she will make me cry. There's no way I could ever do a comedy scene with her or a serious scene. I mean, even this the scene that we had where the two of us were, where she gets sent on a mission and I don't, and I'm like, her? And I'm like, just her expression back to me, she could just stare at me and I'd start laughing. She's so funny. But Sonequa is so kind to everybody, whether you're a day player or you're a regular or whatever. She is so kind and she will get conversations going. She keeps everyone uplifted. I would, you know, it always starts from the top, put it that way.
Captain first.
Captain first. Yeah.
And how is your, because we've obviously spoke about your relationship or lack thereof with the fans of Rookie Blue. What has your interactions with Star Trek fans been like?
Oh my God. Night and day, you are the one. They are, I'm so lucky. I've said this story before, but I remember Anthony Rapp saying to me, oh, people are good. They just wait till they see you. They're going to love you. And I was like, please, this tiny little kid, please. And he's like, no, they're going to love you. And I just did not expect the love that I got. And I am so grateful for it. Cause it was like a breath of fresh air. It was nice to be appreciated.
I suppose that's quite a stark contrast from Rookie Blue as well.
100%. Night and day.
Star Trek has the best fans.
Yes, I concur.
Now, without getting you in trouble with your agent and getting you fired and getting you even more censored, what can you tell us about season 5 that doesn't get you in trouble, Rachel?
From what I know of it, is I think fans are going to love this season. Whole Bonnie and Clyde thing that happened. I thought it was really good from what I saw. I think I'm a little heartbroken that this is the last season. I don't know. This is just me observing, but I think the network maybe might regret not. I don't know. I don't know. I have to be very careful here, but it's a shame because this is a really great season, but maybe it's good to go out on a high note.
Yeah. If you had to describe season 5 in a single word.
Oh,
oh my God, Mike, this is the best interview ever. Rachel was not expecting these types of questions at all. She thought it was going to be a softball interview.
One word.
Yes.
One word. Adventure. That's so lackluster. I can't.
Okay, they're fine. No, we'll go with adventure.
And
fire.
How did you like on the last day of your filming on the show? And again, we don't know exactly, is that the last ever episode or whatever it is? What did you feel when you were kind of saying goodbye to the character and the cast and the crew one last time? What was that like for you?
I didn't know it would be one last time. I think if I'd known, my goodbye really was when Nan stayed on the sea ship. That was my chance to say goodbye. Yeah. And then coming back and being part of Federation, there was always a possibility of, oh, well, you never know. She could come back again and again and again. Like, you never know. So I didn't know it was a goodbye. Had I known, but the last scene that I was ever in was an amazing scene to be in. Having now retrospect, knowing that was the last scene, amazing scene to be in.
And if you got a chance in the future to come back as the character, would you take it?
100%.
Would you come back to the franchise as a different character? So if you were given a spot in Lower Decks or Strange New Worlds, would you come back?
I would, yeah.
Alex Kurtzman, you heard it here first.
I'm kind of hoping I hearing about the Academy. And then I have a few people sending me notes and be like, Rachel, you need to be a part of the Academy. You need to be the security instructor for the Academy. And I'm like,
yes.
Yes.
We wholeheartedly agree.
Mike, when we're advertising the episode, Mike, we know what to put on it now. Yep. Non for Academy is what the hashtag
that's gonna
is
be going the hashtag. To be.
Yes, that's exactly it. And Rachel, what do you hope to do next now? So obviously, kind of like we'll date the podcast now because your episode of Law and Order Toronto is on tonight, 28th of March. What do you hope to do now? Like, obviously, you've got such an interest in behind the scenes stuff and things like that. But I know your love is in front of the camera, but what do you hope to do in the next couple of years?
I'm still strengthening sort of my perspective behind the camera. So I'm with my DSLR a lot more now. My camera is rather intimidating for me because I spent 11 years with my XTI and now I'm on a 5D Mark IV Canon. So she's a beast.
She is a beast.
Stare at her, she's beautiful. I love her. But I'm basically just right now trying to find my voice. What am I trying to say? What do I want to communicate? What kind of art am I trying to communicate? So that's really just what I'm working on right now. And I think that will dictate. I mean, my agent has said to me many times, well, you know, direct a short and let's get you doing episodic TV. That is definitely something that I would be interested in for sure.
You could be the next Jonathan Frakes.
I mean, you know, he's so cool. He's such a good guy. So, we'll see. I don't know yet. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of Kubrick and I love symbolism and art. This is my visual arts background is I love symbolism and art and not to get political or anything, but the way things are going in this world, you know, I often reflect back to art history and times where things were encoded in art because they had to be. Mm. So it's just a very different sort of, I don't want to direct just for the sake of directing. I want to actually have something worthwhile to say and to communicate. So.
Mike, I'm going to leave the last question to you.
This won't take any thinking whatsoever. It's super easy. Don't need to worry about it. Rachel, what does Star Trek mean to you?
Family. Family.
I love that.
You know, you could have defined Star Trek Discovery Season 5 with one word and you could have said family. Family. There it was. That was the word you could have used in that situation.
No. Let's reconvene.
I'm going to get an email at like 5 o'clock in the morning from Rachel going, I have it. Get him out of bed. We'll record it. We can just slip it in there into the episode. No one will know.
We just start getting random video clips emailed to us with just segments in that we could just cut in.
Rachel will be kind of putting up the blurb or the kind of the image from the episode going, wait a second. Here's the actual answer I meant to say. Really sorry. Watch the episode again or it'll be fine.
You know, that's good. One image is worth 1,000 words. So you exactly. bet.
There we go then.
Actually, Mike,
1,000 words.
Because of that, then we're going to let Rachel pick what the thumbnail image for this episode is going to be. So, Rachel, that's your mission now. You've got to pick which image of Non you want us to use for the thumbnail of this episode. That's on you. You've got to make that determination.
Oh,
not right now though. You're okay. You've got time, but you have to. You're done. You've got time, but you've got to pick it.
Okay, deal.
Here we go now. Look at that fantastic stuff.
Awesome. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for coming on this episode. This has been incredible. Definitely one of my favorite episodes so far. So thank you for being here. And for everyone watching and listening, if you'd like to catch up with more Clone Star podcasts, make sure you check out our website, clonestarpod.com, for amazing fan art and blogs written by you, our fans. Until next time, live long and prosper.